With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
What is happening, everybody? This is Brad Rowland. This is the Talking Chop Podcast, episode 21. Joining me today after a long hiatus for the podcast, I apologize. It's been more than a week, and that shouldn't happen. That's on me. But today, we'll make up for it in a big way with our own Scott Coleman. What's going on, Scott?
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me back on. Can't believe we are already halfway through this fun season that we're in.
Fun season is debatable at certain times, but that's the premise. I'm glad you mentioned that today. Our premise of today's show will be basically we're just going to review the first half. It's going to be not a lot of news coverage from us today, not a lot of mailbag stuff. We'll get back into that in our regular show next week. But before the Braves kick off the second half, or you know, the second half in quotation marks, considering the amount of games played, but post All-Star break on Friday, we wanted to check in with you guys and basically just run down the first half. And Scott is well equipped to do that with me. Just so everybody knows, I sent over some topics to Scott ahead of time. We kind of talked through this a little bit, but it's going to be on the fly as well. And we just basically came up with a bunch of topics, a bunch of categories of basically things that fit for the Atlanta Braves in 2016. We'll start with some positives because that's the kind of show we are, right, Scott? We're a positive, uplifting
show. That's right.
Contrary to popular belief, Talking Chop can be positive at times. And with that, I asked Scott for his biggest major league surprise this season in the 2016 campaign. Scott, what do you think about that that particular category?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate to lose Tyler Flowers to a broken hand for probably the next month or 2 months, because I think he by far has been the biggest surprise. Guys like Freddie Freeman and Julio Teheran have been good, really good for that matter, but everyone expected them to be good. Tyler Flowers has been great, really hitting well with A.J. Pierzynski really looking like a 40-year-old catcher this year. Flowers has gotten a bulk of the starts, and he's been great. Above-average hitting, especially for a catcher, 7 homers in less than 200 plate appearances, which is really quite impressive. And I don't think it's any coincidence that part of why Julio Teheran was an all-star is because Tyler Flowers has caught most of his starts. We had heard that Flowers was a strong pitch framer and really worked well with the pitching staff, and I think what we've seen so far out of Flowers really gives the Braves a solid option moving forward. I think that he will certainly be a factor in 2017, and hopefully he's able to come back from his broken hand and make a little bit of a contribution down the stretch, especially if the Braves go with their youth movement. Bring up guys again like Aaron Blair, Tyrell Jenkins get a couple chances to start. Of course, Matt Whistler and Mike Foltynewicz have been pieces in the rotation now for the better part of the last couple months, excluding Folty's injury. So a lot of good out of Flowers. I like what I've seen. He's on a pretty cheap deal that the Braves have, I believe, for another year with an option year tacked on. So I think he by far has been my biggest pleasant surprise of the year.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that. I think Flowers is the obvious answer. I wrote about him a little bit last week about that contract that you mentioned and just the security that it brings. It's nice to have a catcher that, not that Flowers is going to be an all-star by any means, but he's relatively young. He's 30 years old, and a guy who plays quality defense, pitch frames, handles pitching staff, hits with some power. I think his performance this year is probably a little bit fluky in terms of his batting average and on-base numbers, but you know the power is going to be there. It's always been there for him. And just to have a guy like that in Pierzynski's stead, because you mentioned that it's been ugly there. We'll probably come back to AJ later in the podcast, but having Flowers is very nice. The only other guy I can think of, honestly, for this category is Julio. I think Julio, you know, not that it's a shock that he's been good, but it maybe it'd be a qualifies as a surprise that he's been this good. being an all-star, pitching well in the all-star game. Not that that really matters, one inning of work, but his ERA is lower than I thought it would be. I think most people thought it would be after last season. It's not a shock to say that Julio's pitching well, being the ace of this staff, so to speak. But having him be that good has been a surprise, at least to me, that he's been, not necessarily an ace level guy, but, nothing else. Right on pace to be a strong number two with the way that he's pitched this season.
Absolutely. I just looked it up right now. Julio, of course, who's been by far and away the best starter the Braves have. He was so rough last year, and if it wasn't for a better month of September, it would have been even worse. Looking back at his numbers from the first half of last year, his FIP was 4.71, which is brutal. He wasn't striking anyone out, or at least not striking him out at the rate he is. He was walking about another batter per nine innings. So absolutely. And what's really amazing too is Julio's numbers. If you take out those first couple starts, sure, you can say if you remove the worst starts for any pitcher, they're going to have better numbers. But a guy who does not like pitching in cold weather at all, his numbers are really pretty remarkable considering the turnaround he's had from last season.
Yeah, I love some good arbitrary endpoints, Scott. So that's fine. We'll just take out the first few starts. Throw them away. Who cares?
If it helps the trade value, it won't hurt anybody.
Absolutely. On the biggest surprise category, the positive side, we'll go to the minor leagues. I'll go ahead and start. My guy is Rio Ruiz. Sorry, I can't talk. It's really nice to see Ruiz coming into his own after a really really ugly season last year. Ruiz is not really profiled, at least in my opinion, as a star-level player, but with as weak as the Braves have been at third base, it's really nice to see him playing well and being so young, even still now, being so young in AAA, that it's good to have a guy like that coming up. And I know most of our fan base knows, at least has heard the name of Rio Ruiz, but, it's really surprising versus his level from last year to this year is really what I'm looking at in terms of that category. What'd you come up with for your biggest minor league baseball surprise this year?
I think Dustin Peterson was a guy who was maybe in the 25 to 30 range for most prospect rankings coming into the year. And he's a guy who was hitting well last year and then got hurt in the bus crash and really kind of fell off. This year, though, Peterson has been terrific. He's been consistent. His numbers have actually gotten better every single month that he's in AA. He's just 21 or 22 years old. Somebody had a great stat that Peterson, playing in AA ball, is of all of his at-bats this year, and he's approaching 400. He's faced an older pitcher in all but two of his at-bats, which is pretty remarkable. So he's a solid 2 years young for the league. I don't think anyone expects Peterson to come up and be a star similar to Ruiz and what you kind of touched on. But considering what the Braves currently have as far as legitimate outfield bats in the system, Peterson has really come a long way. I think he's another year in AAA. Next year he'll start in Gwinnett, though he will get a look in spring training. But again, a guy who was probably – he was a third round pick, but he certainly wasn't thought of as a big time prospect when he came over in the Justin Upton deal. He's really been quite good all year long in Mississippi and really makes quite a top four for the Mississippi Braves right now between Albies, Connor Lien, now that he's back, Dansby, and he hits fourth. So a lot of good stuff out of Dustin, and hopefully he's able to keep it up throughout the rest of the year and give the Braves a legitimate corner outfield bat to at least look at and consider when looking ahead to 2017 and beyond.
Yeah, Peterson, it should be noted, like you mentioned his age, he's younger than Dansby Swanson.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where we think of Swanson as so young because he just got drafted, but obviously he played college baseball, and Peterson's still younger than Swanson. So not to say that we should be more excited about Peterson than Swanson because that's not true, but just for some context, people kind of gave up on Peterson last year. You mentioned the bus crash. To see him playing this well at Double A, playing against quality competition at his age, is very, very encouraging. And the outfield is ugly, as you mentioned. Outside of Malik, the high minors in the outfield has not been a very encouraging spot for the Braves recently. So Peterson's kind of that next guy in the system coming up. So that'll be good to see and follow him coming through. We can't be positive forever, Scott, and I know you know that, so it's time to move to the biggest disappointment section of the podcast. before we get to actually the disappointments, I'll lead off with this one. Hector Oliveira, we kind of went back and forth on whether we should even include Oliveira. I'll go ahead and throw him out there. He's the obvious major league disappointment this year, given the domestic violence charge and the long suspension for Oliveira. He's actually set to come off that suspension in a couple of weeks here. There's some uncertainty as to whether he'll actually play. There's been a lot of debate. A lot of people think that he might just never set foot on the Braves field again in that uniform, whereas others think, you know, as soon as he's available to play, you kind of have to put him out there, given his salary and what the team owes him. So we won't, you know, terribly debate that today, but he is obviously the biggest disappointment given the salary, given the circumstance of why he hasn't been playing, and given what was given up for him in trade. I think we can agree on that, right, Scott?
Absolutely. It's really unfortunate, and it'll be interesting to see what the Braves do in a couple weeks.
Yeah, outside Oliveira, I'll go with Eric Arbar. There's two obvious ones. I think you might have another lean on this one as well. Ibar is one of those two guys. You know, he's been better lately, I'll say that, after coming back from injury, and I thought he might never come back following that injury just because of how bad he was early in the season. He still has a 37 WRC plus for the year. With a WAR of -1.3, which is kind of hard to do. Even now in mid July, it's kind of hard to play enough to accumulate that kind of negative statistic. It wasn't as if I thought Ivar was going to be great in Atlanta, but trading for him, obviously he was not the centerpiece of that trade, and that should be mentioned for sure in the Simmons trade. But getting Ivar, we thought he would at least be like a, you know, maybe a below average major league shortstop in terms of starters, but not necessarily one of the worst players in baseball, which is what he's been this year. So I think that qualifies him pretty easily for the disappointment level. But I think there's one more guy that you might be looking at.
Yeah, I think AJ Pierzynski.
That's the one.
As surprisingly good as he was last year, he has been really up there with Ibar for being one of the worst players in baseball all year. If it wasn't for Tyler Flowers and Pierzynski had to play a couple more games, he'd probably be the worst overall, at least going by WAR. You know, Pierzynski's hitting .205 with a .227 on base, .250 slugging. Couldn't throw me out trying to steal second base. Couldn't throw me out carrying a 50-pound bag of weights trying to steal second base. You know, he doesn't have quite the ability to work a game behind the plate like Flowers does. Not that the Braves at least should have expected him to flirt with a 300 average again, like he kind of did last year. But Pierzynski's been pretty brutal, and I think at the end of his contract here, he certainly will be gone next year. Again, no one expected great things from AJ, but he's been pretty brutal this year.
Yeah, that's the obvious one. I think Pierzynski, we kind of saw it coming, as you mentioned, the age. But with the way he played last year, there was some reason to think that he could be productive enough to play a meaningful role. But, yeah, it's been as ugly as imaginable for Pierzynski. And that, on the bright side, at least, this probably takes the Braves off the market for Pierzynski beyond this year. He's only committed for this season. So I don't think the Braves are going to get sucked into thinking that he can do this one more time next year when the team is trying to compete. I think you'll probably see them enter the season with Flowers and another option, whether it be a young guy they can pick up somewhere else. Or maybe even, you know, there's a possibility that they spend big in free agency, but Flowers will be one of the two catchers. I can't imagine Pierzynski will be the other one. I think he'll probably retire given this season and his age.
Yeah. Only other guy I would say for a disappointment, and I know that it's tough because he missed a month right at the start with injury, but Ender Inciarte, for as great as his glove has been, he's not hitting a lick. Granted, he has been a little unlucky. His batting average on balls in play is about 50 or 60 points below, but even then, there were the concerns that he would not hit outside of Chase Field, as he had never really done throughout his career. He's hitting .227. With a on base and slugging that are both hovering right around 300. I would really like to see him pick it up a bit in the second half. He's shown glimpses of being able to be kind of an all fields hitter, put the ball down the line, put it in the gap, beat out an infield single. And again, with his glove, he's going to play just about every day, but Inciarte's bat, there was the worry that he wouldn't hit outside of Chase Field, and he hasn't to this point. You know, it'd be nice to see a few balls bounce his way in the second half so he can regain some of his value heading into 2017.
Yeah, Inciarte's a guy that I love unconditionally. So it's one of those things where I didn't want to bring it up, but yeah, you're absolutely right that he has not been at the plate, at least what the Braves were hoping for. His defense and base running are so valuable that it almost, I don't want to say it doesn't matter because it does matter, but he can be a major leaguer without hitting. But at the same time, you worry about him long term as the starting center fielder. If he can't hit above the level that he's hitting this year. So, the worst case scenario for Enciarte is that he's a fourth outfielder, which is not bad considering what the Braves gave up in that trade and how that's looking with Shelvin Miller heading to AAA. But it would be nice if Enciarte hit just a little bit more so he can keep that job and have Braves have a low-cost option moving forward in that position. Even if he's not a star-level player, he'll be a productive one. Outside of the major league roster, we'll go to the minor leagues in terms of this category and disappointments. You want to fire off and start with this one?
Yeah, I think with these minor league guys, and of course our minor league experts at TC who see a little bit more of these guys in person, it's always really dangerous to scout a box score, as they say. You don't know what the pitcher was working on that night. You don't know the umpire. You don't know the playing condition. You don't know, if a fielder doesn't get to a ball that he should have. With that said, I think Sean Newcomb, who of course was the main piece in the Andrelton Simmons deal, has been pretty frustrating would be the word I would use. I don't know if he's necessarily been a disappointment because the upside certainly remains there as a lefty who can easily throw mid-90s. He's still striking everybody out, but like he has in his whole career, he's still walking way too many batters. He has an ERA of about 4.8 in AA, and he just turned 23, so it's not a situation of he's playing competition that's 3 years older than him and he's struggling. He's getting pretty close to being on par for the league average in age. So that's not to say that Newcomb is a bust or that he'll never turn into anything. He certainly could be a number two or number three starter one day if he can harness his control and strike out batters at the big league level like he has in the minors. But would like to see a better second half for him. At this point, he's had about a full calendar year in AA. To see him kind of turn a corner in the second half would be really encouraging. Hopefully get him up to Gwinnett by the start of 2017. So not to hate on the guy. I am not trying to say he was, it's the worst trade in history, but you would like to see him improve command a little bit and turn around, make some improvements in Mississippi the rest of the way.
Yeah, in terms of Newcomb, it would be nice to see him coming along a little bit faster, only because of the fact that the pressure's on him, I think, more than any of these Braves prospects, because he was the centerpiece and really the only piece of that Simmons trade. Not the only, I shouldn't say the only piece, but definitely the centerpiece, the guy that the Braves were targeting in that trade. And that kind of puts pressure on him because you can match him up with a guy that the Braves fans loved in Simmons and not having other pieces to take the focus off of Newcomb. So the pressure is going to be on him, and it's easy to see why people are disappointed with him so far. But you mentioned it; the upside's still there. In terms of guys outside of Newcomb, I'll put Lucas Sims out there. Sims actually kind of had a lights out start to the season, which makes it even more brutal that he currently sports an ERA of 7.56 in 50 innings of AAA this year. Sims again is only 22 years old. Came straight out of high school, was a local product from Gwinnett County, so there's still room for growth there, and he still has some quality stuff, but 6.66 walks per nine in 50 innings is not going to get it done for Lucas Sims. All of our prospect guys are mad at me still because I was actually in attendance the night that things kind of fell apart for Sims after that hot start, and ever since then it's kind of been pretty ugly, so those guys, headlined by Eric, are still upset with me personally. But no, I'm not trying to bury Sims. I think we should, you mentioned it before, we should be careful in saying these guys are disappointing, but I think especially given the start that Sims qualifies for this just because of the fact that the numbers don't lie. They might lie a little bit, but they don't lie enough to write off a 7.56 ERA. So hopefully Sims can sort of capture whatever he had early in the season. That monster strikeout rate is there. He's still striking out over 10 batters per nine innings, so that's encouraging. But at 22, he's been a professional for 4 whole years now. And the numbers haven't really been great anywhere since his first year or so in the system. So it would be encouraging to see him come alive a little bit, but it may not be right away this year. He might be up a level too high also at AAA. Obviously, he's gone back and forth a little bit. So Sims is worth keeping an eye on, and I think he qualifies a little bit for this distinction.
Yeah, and in fun news, because we like fun at Talking Chop, Keith Law did release his updated top 50 here earlier on Thursday. Dansby is 12th, Ozzie Albies is 15th. Colby Allard, who Keith Law was really high on coming to last year's draft, is 38th, and Sean Newcomb dropped about 20 spots. He's now 47th. But Law only did top 50, but the fact that the Braves have four of the top 47 prospects in baseball, of course, that doesn't even include their recent international signees. I think Law did include a couple of his recent draftees, and while Anderson Wentz and Mueller didn't make it, there's still plenty of upside in the depth right now, and the system overall is pretty ridiculous, even if it may lack a little bit of high ups. Side talent at the moment.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. We just kind of crapped on Sean Newcomb, and he's still a top 50 prospect.
Yeah, good problem to have.
So yeah, it's one of those things where Keith Law is not the end all be all, but I think we all respect his work a great deal. So being a top 50 guy for him, and Newcomb still lands on our disappointment list. Maybe our bar is a little bit too high, but
sure,
we do like Sean Newcomb still. Moving away from players a little bit, I'll talk about some of the moments from this first half. What is your favorite moment of the first half? This can be, you know, performances. It could be team based run. Anything that you particularly enjoyed from the first half of the season.
The moment that sticks out to me was the sweep of the Mets about a month ago in New York City. To be able to sweep the defending champs or the defending National League champs was pretty great. I think that was the Braves' sixth win in a row for a year that's had so much losing to be able to beat the Mets. Everyone always wants to beat the Mets. To sweep them, I think they beat DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Mets that weekend or something like that. So that was really fun. It's good to beat the Mets in their place. I also, and we'll touch on this in a bit, but I also really love seeing Malik Smith. I think he is a ton of fun to watch. I was legitimately bummed when he broke his hand or broke his thumb in that series, actually, against the Mets. I guess it takes away a little bit from it, but I thought Malik's was really fun to watch as well, and I hope we get to see him back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the answer in terms of the Major League team. My favorite moment's going to be the draft. I just love the draft now. For the longest time, I was not an MLB draft guy, but now that I've kind of dove in the last couple of seasons while working for Talking Chop and kind of doing a little bit of work for us on that, I've really kind of fell in love with that process. Obviously, it helps to have three guys that we already talked about earlier with Anderson, Wentz, and Mueller that are very, very fun to write about, talk about, and, you know, three of the top 20-ish prospects in the entire draft come to the Braves, and the Braves having all the ammunition to spend and, you know, try to grab top tier talent. It's been a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed that. That whole week was fun for me personally. So yeah. I'll throw that in there. But yeah, in terms of the Atlanta Braves team as itself, as currently constructed, that sweep over the Mets in a 6-game winning streak in mid to late June was, I don't want to say it's going to be the highlight of the whole season, but it's probably safe to assume that's going to be the best baseball this team plays all year. Pivoting away from favorite moment, I think the obvious choice for least favorite moment is probably the morning of the Hector Oliveira suspension. Is there anything that can even come close to that, or should we not even try?
I don't think so. That's just such a bad situation all the way around, and it gives the Braves a really bad, tough decision they have to make here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, there's no fun in that to be had. Pivoting away from that quickly. There's one of the runners up for least favorite moments would have been when Malik Smith got hurt, but I think you want to talk about him a little bit as the guy you've been most encouraged by at the major league level.
Yeah, you know, with Malik, he hit something. He had a great quote after a game. I think he hit two homers, and he said, "Every home run I hit is by accident," because he's not trying to hit the ball 400 feet.
I love that so much.
Yeah, considering he's so much fun to watch. I really liked what I saw out of Malik. His first week or two was really rough, as it would be for just about any 23-year-old playing in the big leagues for their first time ever. But he has okay numbers. He was really coming on after kind of looking like a puppy who learned how to run or go up the stairs for the first time. He really kind of calmed down on the base paths, wasn't oversliding on the bases, wasn't getting picked off. There was a stretch, I think, where three nights in a row he was either thrown out stealing or picked off. That's certainly not a skill, or I guess it's not a lack of skill on his part. It's just you know, slowing the game down, paying attention, making sure you're doing the smart thing on the bases, even if it's maybe not the fun thing. Because just seeing Maddux, I can only imagine him just running wild any chance he got on base in the minors. But, you know, Maddux struck out a little bit, but also walked quite a bit. I think he's a guy who isn't necessarily a star, but over a full season, he's certainly a capable starting outfielder. And again, he's just 23 years old. Hopefully he can come back by the end of August, early September, and show the Braves. Because even if he is just a really good fourth outfielder, with his speed off the bench and his glove off the bench, he could be a very valuable asset, especially as the Braves turn into a little bit of a better team. He kind of strikes me as a guy who maybe is even more appreciated on a good team than he is on a bad team, because a good team can utilize him a little bit better, whereas he may not be a guy who can start 150, 160 games a year.
Yeah, you mentioned there's going to be a debate. We talked about it earlier with Inciarte. I don't think this team is going to be able to play both of these guys every day in the outfield just because of the bats. You got to have power from your outfield at some point. And even if you don't get power, you have to have above average offense from your outfield. To be a winning team, it's pretty tough to not have that from your outfield. And you know, Maddux might be an above average offensive player at some point, just because of the speed that could allow him to get on base at a higher rate than you might expect, given his actual contact and power ability. But one of those two guys is going to have to hit enough to play center field every day. You know, obviously the team could move on from either one of them at any moment, via trade or however else, maybe sign somebody over them, but. Inciarte and Maddux playing together might be a problem. It's definitely a problem if they hold on to Nick Markakis, who we'll talk about later. Those three guys absolutely can't play together in the outfield, just because of the absolute no power from all three of them. But if we assume that Markakis won't be here long term, which is a bold assumption to make, I'll grant you. But one of those guys, we're going to need, you know, Braves are going to need Maddux or Inciarte, preferably both, to hit. Otherwise, you're going to have to pick one of those guys as a fourth outfielder, just because there's not enough room for both of them. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. While there's a lack of bats really pretty much everywhere on the diamond right now, other than first base, they I don't think they can run Inciarte and Maddux out there. It's unfortunate they're both left-handed, because that could be a pretty cool little platoon.
It would be an awesome platoon for sure.
But of course, as you know, fate would have it, they're both lefties and don't really hit lefties all that well. So
yeah, I do think Maddux's upside is considerable. You know, I've kind of towed the line on him this year, trying to temper some of the expectations for him from a lot of Braves fans that are overly excited about Maddux. But at the same time, I think I'm higher on him than some people who basically have written him off. There's a few people in Braves country who kind of just have assumed he's definitely going to be a fourth outfielder or something of that degree. I'm kind of in the middle there. I think he can be, if he becomes a league average hitter, I think we're assuming he's going to be a good defender, and he's obviously going to be able to run. And if you can do that, the combination of those three things, you're a two or three win player, and that's all you need to be. So I think Maddux could be that. I don't want to say that he absolutely will be that, but I'm pretty confident he's going to be a little bit better than people, at least in the negative people, assume that he'll be, and that should allow him to be a starting quality player.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll get away from that. I asked you this question. This is an interesting one that I've been asked a couple times in the mailbag portion. I want to ask it to you first. If you had to list the players that currently make up the Atlanta Braves core as we stand here at the All-Star break in 2016, who are the names that you would throw out there?
The first four that would probably come to mind would be Freddie Freeman and Julio Teheran, of course, considering what they've done, assuming that John Coppola doesn't decide to flip Teheran in the next 2 weeks. But Freddie and Julio, and I think Dansby and Albies, they're playing so well. Dansby has picked it up in Double A. Albies has just destroyed Double A at the age of 19, which is pretty ridiculous. It seems like, if you go off of what Mark Bowman of MLB.com says, he thinks that Albies and Swanson will be in Atlanta sometime within the next month or so. Of course, the rosters expand in September, but considering what the Braves have up the middle right now, and that it wouldn't really affect their service time, why not? You know, let's see them have a chance. The Braves really need to be careful not to rush them. But in another month or so, if they're still both playing well in the minors in Mississippi, or if they move them up to Gwinnett, I think that's certainly the Braves' middle infield of the future. So with that, I'll say Freddie, Julio, Dansby, and Albies.
I think you're if you're naming the four guys, those are obviously the ones in the current organization that are the top four assets that the Braves have. You know, it has to be said, and we could talk about this a little bit more now, that, you know, Tehran's going to be, again, a name we hear on the market until the deadline passes. The deadline's just a little bit over 2 weeks now. And today, one of the main target teams that everybody keeps talking about for Julio, the Boston Red Sox, kind of made a move on a pitcher. They traded for San Diego's Drew Pomeranz. That might take some heat off of the Julio trade rumor bandwagon, just because Boston was the team that I heard the most associated with a potential pursuit of Julio. I've kind of turned around the corner on, I actively don't want the Braves to trade Tehran at this point. Obviously for me, this is the way I think about it, that everybody is available at the right price. So if somebody bowls copy over in a way that they did with that Shelby Miller offer, that's the famous one now, then sure, go ahead and pull the trigger on it. But aside from that, even if the Braves were getting fair value, I think I'd like to see them hold on to Julio at this point. I'm encouraged by his performance this season, but more than that, at some point, this team has to start fielding a major league roster for next season. They want to be competitive. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to win 95 games in 2017, but if they want to be competitive and be a 500-ish team by the time they open the new ballpark, the fastest way to do that is to just keep Julio on the team. Even if he's not the number one starter next year, preferably you'd have somebody ahead of him, I guess, if you're trying to be a big winning team. But that's not exactly the easiest path to go down. So securing a guy that you know is going to be above average is huge. So I would align with you on those four guys, but with the caveat of we don't know what Copy's going to do. He's definitely capable of pulling the trigger on Julio, even if he has said that Julio's not available over and over again over the last couple weeks.
I think too with Julio, maybe this is more just Twitter chat or what, but you know, everyone says, oh, he's been the Braves' ace, and then, you know, anyone can open up Julio's FanGraphs page and make kind of the snippy, well, he's not a 2.96 ERA guy. And that's true. You know, his FIP is a full run higher than his ERA, but you're also talking about a guy who is cheap for another 3.5 years and has a career 3.36 ERA over 750 innings. His career FIP is a 3.9. Even if you balance the two out and say he's a 3.5 ERA guy moving forward, which may be the case, maybe better, maybe worse, considering that he's only going to get an average of like $5 million a year the next 3.5 years, I really think that's so valuable to the Braves, especially looking at the free agent contracts teams are getting. I think it has to be an absolute no-brainer. John Coppola couldn't live with himself if he said no offer, because as you said, the Braves do have to become competitive at some point, even not just for the start of 2017, but 2018, 2019, even 2020. So I'm with you. I don't think the Braves should or will trade Tehran. And of course, he's not the top 10 ERA guy in the National League moving forward for the next 3.5 years, but he is a hell of a pitcher, and he's coming into his prime years. And considering the price tag, I can't imagine that the Braves trade him at all, let alone for anything less than just an absolute haul.
So it seems like we're both on the team stay put for Julio. With that, we should at least tackle the trade deadline a little bit more. Is there a guy or two or three that you'd like to see moved, even if it's just in theory, before the deadline? I can think of a couple guys myself, but you might have the same ones I do.
I think the main player is Aroldis Vizcaíno. He, of course, has not had a good last couple of weeks.
Thanks, Nicker.
I kid.
I sort of kid. But
well, no, I mean he's already passed his big league career high in innings pitched and appearances. You do worry about the health of his arm, but I think Vizcaíno, if he can have a good strong 2 weeks, he's a guy you absolutely deal. Just considering his past, if you can get a nice couple pieces for him, why not? Especially considering some of the hard throwing relievers that are coming up through the system right now. Nick Markakis, I think we would both agree it'd be a dream to get rid of Cakes in the
That's
2.5
my name
years,
right there.
2.5 years left. And you can certainly touch on Cakes a little bit more, because if they can get anything for him, even if it's just more of a salary dump, I think the Braves would happily welcome it.
Yeah, Markakis he'd be the lead guy for me. Obviously, if they could maximize this guy, you know, on a big package, that would be an overpay. Relievers are generally overrated. I think our staff, even at the time, was kind of all in on the Kimbrel trade when it happened, just to see him get, you know, you want to go out and maximize value. I think the Braves were able to do that in that trade for Kimbrel originally. And Vizcaino's not Kimbrel. He's not as good as Kimbrel. He's also not nearly as safe, obviously, given the injury history and, you know, his much smaller track record of success. And, you know, he's not that young. He'll be 26 soon. And obviously that's fairly young, but it's not exactly as if he's going to be under control for a long, long time at a super cheap rate. So even if he's able to continue this performance, he's still a reliever on a bad team. It's time to sell if you can get anything for him that's of equal or greater value. But Markakis is the one. I think I've been on this since the day he signed the contract. It's not as if he's an awful player. Again, I've said this over and over again, but Markakis is not an awful player. He has a skill. He gets on base. There's nothing wrong with getting on base. Even if you don't have power, we make fun of the power because it limits his ceiling considerably. But if you're a guy who only gets on base, plays you know, below average outfield to be kind, and has absolutely no power, there's really a ceiling on your usefulness for a playoff team. It would be different maybe in the American League, where you could probably hide him maybe as a DH occasionally, maybe as a platoon guy. You take advantage of his, you know, 360, 370 on base percentage in a more useful way. But to trot him out there every day and have him, you know, 600 plate appearances, he's going to be like a one win player. And, you know, that's not awful by any means, but you're paying $11 million a year. And while that might not sound like a monstrous amount in today's baseball landscape, the Braves are going to have some sort of spending restriction. We don't really know what that's going to be for Liberty Media moving forward into the new ballpark, but $11 million is not nothing. And to think that the Braves won't have a better option by even next year is probably that's kind of terrifying, to be honest. If he's on the roster and not having a better option, that's scary. And obviously you don't want him on the roster $11 million if he's your fourth outfielder. So it's time to sell if the Braves can. I don't know if they could. Honestly, I don't know if they could dump Markakis for nothing right now. I want to say it's just money. So I would rather keep him, I guess, now than to eat the contract. I'm not in a position where I want the Braves to trade Markakis and then still pay, you know, 80% of the deal. That would be a bit too aggressive, because he's not an awful player again. But if you can get rid of the contract as is for nothing, I would absolutely do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the other thing too, and you kind of touched on this, is he is just kind of a roadblock in right field. Considering he's under contract for another 2.5 years, it really limits. You can only play three outfielders, and if you figure that one of Inciarte and Malik are in there, maybe two of them, then you certainly have to get a better bat than his. And with the Braves, they will have money to spend, but they can't spend it if they don't have positions open to spend it on. So we'll certainly see. I'm with you. I wouldn't want to eat, you know, 80-90% or even a pure salary dump like the Braves did with Melvin a couple years ago.
Shout out to Melvin, by the way. Melvin is knocking it dead in San Diego. I always believed. Sorry.
he might have a 30-30 season with the Padres, and I think that might be the ultimate middle finger to the Braves and Braves fans everywhere. He's almost like to the point of Melky Cabrera when Melky left the Braves and then had a couple really good years with the Giants.
That's the ultimate one. You're right. Melky's the one that stinks the most.
Something about center fielders who don't do well in Atlanta and then going on to good things elsewhere really kind of hurts. But yeah, I'm with you. If the Braves can get someone to take Cakes and even half of his deal, I think they do it. But if it's a pure salary dump, I'd rather just hold on to him, maybe make him a fourth outfielder. If there's someone you could platoon him with who, you know, doesn't really hit righties but hits lefties, that's another option. So we'll see what they do. While there are issues, he's certainly not – right field isn't the biggest problem that the Braves have right now.
For sure. I think it should be noted, though, that Markakis, while he had a 107 WRC plus last year, being that he was, you know, a slightly above average offensive player, this year that's down to 87, and most of that is that, you know, his on-base percentage is down to 328. If he posts a 328 on-base percentage in the second half, that's a guy you don't want around.
Yeah.
Just because he doesn't do anything else. So if he's not getting on base at a clearly above average clip, it gets uglier and uglier, and he's basically been a replacement level player this year. He has a 0.2 WAR according to Fangraphs, and then over that's, you know, more than half the season if you actually figure out when the All-Star break lands. So you're looking at a sub-1 WAR, and that's I don't think that's necessarily who he is. He's not over the hill age-wise to the point where he couldn't suddenly start getting on base again. But if he doesn't do that, then it gets even uglier.
Yeah, agree with everything.
before we go, I want to at least mention a couple of other guys that could be targets for the Braves to try to trade. I would try to sell high on Jeff Francoeur. That might not be a popular opinion, given that Francoeur is a fan favorite, and he still gets big cheers at Turner Field every time he's introduced. I went to high school with Jeff, so I'm partial to him and always will root for him. But at the same time, like I think he's hitting above his head right now. So if some team fancies themselves in the Jeff Francoeur market, that's a playoff team and wants to find a guy who can hit left-handed pitching and get something of an asset for him, that would be a good guy to target and do that. Also, Gordon Beckham, if he comes back and plays well now that he's healthy again, he was playing quite well actually before the injury. So those are two guys that I think the Braves should at least throw out there on the market, a la what they did with Kelly Johnson, and see if they can extract even a minor asset for him. Because these guys are not under control long term, so you want to maximize those guys, and being that they're not going to be on the team 2-3 years from now.
Yeah, and I wrote about it a little bit in our in the trade deadline preview I did for Talking Chop earlier in the week. And I think with Francoeur, and even Gordon Beckham, as you mentioned, you do wonder if the Braves do something similar to what they did last year with Jim Johnson and Kelly Johnson, trading guys who are playing well at the deadline and then re-signing them in the offseason. You know, Francoeur, as you mentioned, is a Georgia boy. Gordon Beckham is a Georgia boy. So those guys would, the appeal of Atlanta would always be there. So if the Braves really love the two guys as bench guys and strong influences in the clubhouse, maybe you trade them, get a decent prospect or two for them here in the next 2 weeks, and then, you know, just kind of have a handshake agreement. Hey, if you're looking in the offseason, we'll be happy to take you back. You know, it's a smart move. Even if you get a fringe reliever for 2 seasons for them, that's probably more valuable to the Braves than 2 months of non-contending baseball. So why not? If there's a halfway decent offer out there, I'm guessing that both Francoeur and Beckham get dealt.
Makes sense to me. Before we wrap this thing up, Scott, you have anything to plug? You mentioned the trade deadline preview. Anything else that you've got written out there that we should tell people about?
Oh, the Talking Chop top 25 prospects. I think that's going to wrap up tomorrow.
Absolutely.
All of our prospect guys did a great job with that. I think 1 through 5 gets revealed tomorrow. Folks can probably figure out who the top 5 are just from process of elimination from 6 to 25. I think just looking at that list, you compare the system now to what it was 2 or 3 years ago, and it's legitimately amazing. Of course, 3 years ago, the Braves also won 97 games, so people cared a little bit less about how the farm system was. But it's really pretty remarkable just the pure depth that's in the system right now. I know I did my top 30 prospects about 2 weeks ago, and it's hard. You know, after the top 2 or 3 guys, you can really make a case for a handful of them to be anywhere from 4 to 15, and you can make a huge case for about 20 guys to fit in that back end, you know, from 20 to 30. So the overall depth is exciting. And of course, you know, we'll see. I think in the second half, if the Braves start to bring up Swanson and Albies, Malik Smith gets healthy, Mike Foltynewicz keeps pitching like he did before the break, Matt Whistler has shown that at least flashes of being good. If Julio is still around, if they bring back Aaron Blair, who will hopefully figure it out a little bit. You know, if the average player on the team is 23 years old, that's something I'm certainly going to tune into just to see kind of a glimpse of what the 2017 team will look like, and hopefully get some momentum heading into next year, add a couple guys in the offseason, and have a at least somewhat competitive team once they move to Cobb County.
I knew you'd be able to put a positive spin on things, Scott. I appreciate always. That about you.
That's why.
thanks for coming on, Scott. We want to tell everybody to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Give us a 5-star review, preferably on iTunes. Tell your friends. Follow us on Talking Chop at Talking Chop. Follow Scott at Scott:55, and follow me at BT Roland. Stay tuned for a podcast episode over the weekend at some point. A quick turnaround as the Braves get back in action on Friday. And thanks as always for listening.